Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
For more on the Sampson case and some of the other issues facing Massachusetts courts in the coming new year, we're joined in studio by Nancy Gertner, former federal judge, a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School, and WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, great to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
So this ongoing retrial of Gary Lee Sampson, what's your reaction to this?
Well, you know, I think that the numbers of mitigating factors in one sense is a strategic question. So, for example, it focuses the jury's attention on these things. Hey, jury, you have to then consider these things specifically. Part of the government's challenge was that, in fact, the information could have come in under fewer mitigating factors. So let's pause for a moment. It means the information gets to the jury about his traumatic brain injury, about all the things that might be defenses. And it would the categories then matter only in the sense that the list forces the jury to go one by one, forces the jury to focus. If there was a broad category that said mental illness, they could deal with it peremptorily. Mm. But by making this more specific, they're forced to deal with it one by one. It could increase the jury deliberations. And as David said, they also could, in fact, deal with it as a gestalt. They go through it one by one, but they don't make any they're not obliged to make findings on mitigating factors. They're only obliged to weigh them as against the aggravating factors. They are obliged to make findings on aggravating factors. So on the one hand, this is like telling the jury, please pay attention to these issues in some detail. But beyond that, the information that gets to the jury is really no different.
Hmm. As you know, Frank Gaziano was the original prosecutor in the Sampson death penalty case, and he is now one of the new Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court justices. What did we learn about him during the first Sampson trial that we think might be applicable to his new role on the bench?
I can't really think of anything in particular. I mean, he was a well-respected prosecutor. No one thought that he was underhanded in any way. He did his job exceptionally well. I think that the issue is less what he did in any particular case than something that Senator Warren was concerned about when we were filling vacancies on the federal side, which is it's not that any given prosecutor can't be a terrific judge. There are many, many examples of them. But it's that the bench ought to have balance because it matters where you came from in terms of what you see as important.
Right. Well, you know, we want to talk about that in terms of the makeup of the court in general. It changed last year. It's going to change again this year. Last year, along with Gaziano, there were other members appointed to the bench as well, David Lowy, Kimberly Budd, and we spoke with criminal defense attorney and former state and federal prosecutor Brad Bailey about these appointments, and he said something similar to what you said, that all three people appointed last year had prosecutorial backgrounds. Let's listen.
What was interesting about this last go-round is that all three of the appointees did have prosecutorial experience. You know, there are some that have often felt that over the last few years, some of the appointments, whether at the trial court level or higher, have had a little bit too much of a prosecutorial experience.
So do you think, Nancy, that we need more balance on the court, and how would that be achieved specifically?
Well, as I said, my only experience is when we were filling vacancies, when I was on the part of the committee that recommended to Senator Warren who should fill those vacancies, and she wanted diversity of experience. Mm. Now, why should that matter? It may matter, for example, let's say you have a police officer whose credibility is challenged. If you had no experience in the criminal justice system, you may think that, of course, it's impossible that police officers ever, you know, shade the truth. Mm. Well, if you're a defense lawyer, you might have a different perspective on that. You see things differently. It doesn't mean that where you end up is different, but where you start is different. And particularly in a collegial court, that is to say that makes decisions as a group, you really want voices from different quarters. How do you do that? Well, it's really going to be up to Governor Baker now with respect to the two remaining appointments that he will have this year to promote diversity of experience. Again, I don't want to say that any given prosecutor will not make a fabulous judge or any given defense lawyer will necessarily be defense bound. In fact, it oftentimes happens that defense lawyers are worse on the bench and more strict than prosecutors. But it is a question of everyone has to start somewhere, and the lens through which they start should be different. And then where you finish and where the argument takes you, that's a different issue. But the lens should be different.
But what about when we look at some of the rulings, particularly some of the controversial rulings from the SJC in the past year? Are these rulings made national headlines, which might lead some to believe that this court is very liberal? One ruling said black men may have a legitimate reason to flee police. Another one said that both members of an unmarried couple can be considered parents of a child, even if only one is the biological parent. I mean, what do these things say about the SJC in Massachusetts?
Well, it doesn't say anything new, actually, this year. Since the early 1980s, this has been a court that has been way more protective of rights than the Supreme Court has been, than the United States Supreme Court has been. This is a court that declared the death penalty unconstitutional in the early 80s, that protected choice under the Massachusetts Constitution. So this is not just the past year. Mm-hmm. What is significant about the past year and the coming year is that Governor Baker has an opportunity to get 5 appointments on this Supreme Court.
Let's explain that. That's because of the mandatory retirement.
There's a mandatory retirement, and two additional people who are very fine judges, Margot Botsford and Jerry Hines, are retiring this coming year. So we have really extraordinary changes in the United States Supreme Court that we're on the cusp of, and extraordinary changes in the Mass Supreme Judicial Court. For Governor Baker, it seems to me if he wants to be more than just the not Donald Trump, he has to recognize that the SJC is a treasure and put people on it who will be protective of rights, criminal defendants' rights, civil rights, all sorts of rights as they have been in the past.
But if we look at those three that he already appointed, regardless of the fact that they have strong prosecutorial experience, it would seem that they're rather centrist, at least at this point, if you can generalize. And maybe I'm oversimplifying, but it seems that they're sort of centrist. Does that make you think that Governor Baker then sort of has a handle on where he's going with this? He's got two more. He's done more than half of the 5
right,
that he's likely to do. So where does he go from here? I mean, do you think he has to be extra careful then with those remaining 2, or?
I mean, I'm so reluctant to categorize judges in Massachusetts politics on a centrist liberal, because we've been very, very lucky not to have the kinds of divisions of the national politics in our selections. But there have been giants on this court. Harvard Law professor, you know, Ben Kaplan and Charles Freed and Margie Marshall. There have been giants on this court, liberal, conservative, but giants. People who see the Mass Constitution as a treasure to be interpreted independently of the United States Constitution. That's what it seems to me he should be looking at. And if he means to be someone protective of rights, yes, he should be concerned that these are people who will protect rights more than perhaps the United States Supreme Court will be doing, particularly if President-elect Trump gets to replace 3 members.
One of the first cases of the new year involves marijuana and determining when someone is driving while high. The SJC will hear oral arguments on this on Friday about the viability of roadside sobriety tests. What are the implications of that case, do you think?
Well, I mean, one implication is that if it turns out that the sobriety test that they strike down that test as dispositive of the question of whether or not you are impaired. If they say that the test doesn't prove that and shouldn't be given or shouldn't have those, or the results of the test shouldn't be used, then we'll have to come up with different tests to determine when marijuana smoking leads to impairment. I think it's a critical discussion, though, to have, because marijuana smoking doesn't map directly onto alcohol impairment at all. you can say with respect to alcohol, a certain percentage of alcohol in the blood typically leads to these kinds of consequences. It's not the same thing with marijuana. And the defense lawyers in this case have a point that you would hate to see driving under the influence of marijuana now replace simple possession as where you go to arrest people who shouldn't be arrested. That said, we should come up with tests. We should come up with real objective tests and not just, boy, he looks stoned to me. Mm-hmm. So if this discussion leads to a broader discussion about what kind of objective tests we could come up with, even though this one may not be it, that's really a good thing. We're all going to have to make these kinds of shifts.
We also have the continued consideration by the SJC of cases handled by former state chemist Annie Ducon. In 2013, she pleaded guilty to falsifying drug tests that used as evidence in criminal cases, yet still no real agreement on how to handle the thousands of criminal cases that were involved. We heard this year that there are 24,000 criminal cases, so the ACLU and others have asked the high court to overturn all the convictions that were based on that faulty testing connected to Annie Ducon. The court heard oral arguments. SJC heard oral arguments on this back in November. So what do you expect from the court in this particular case?
Well, I don't know much about prediction at this point, but I do think essentially what the ACLU is saying to the court is enough is enough. This is not a minor scandal. This is a scandal that sort of goes to the integrity of the court. The only issue in drug cases are what the drugs are. And if that was tainted, then we should do something about it. 25 years ago, these cases would have been dismissed out of hand based on government misconduct.
They would have.
They would have been, because there was a very robust law about when the government does something that fundamentally undermines the integrity of the proceeding, that you dismiss charges as a way of checking that behavior in the future. That was one approach. The other approach is to say, no, we have to do it case by case. And if you can come up with other evidence to save this prosecution, then you should. The latter approach hasn't worked. How many years are we into this scandal? The latter approach requires an extraordinary amount of resources. Government is concerned, as it should be, about public safety issues. But when there is an illegal search and you suppress evidence, allowing someone who is in fact guilty of the crime to go free, these things happen in a system that values rights, and we should value rights.
All right. Former federal judge Nancy Gertner is a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll take a look at the supply of illegal drugs on the streets of one community in Massachusetts. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.